What's up with my heart when it skips a beat? Can't feel no pavement out under my feet. I feel my lonely room. Hello, hello, hello. Three times, because today we have an amazing triangle that really starts from Athens, extends up to Malta, and reaches up to Leicester, UK. And we are very happy and excited about this. Allow me to welcome today with us in this next episode of Teacher's Coffee, Sophia Mavridi from Montfort University in Leicester, and Daniel Seri from the University of Malta in Valletta. Hello, my friends. Welcome to Teacher's Coffee.
Hello, George. Hello, Natasha. Hello, everyone.
Hi, George. Hi, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Teacher's Coffee. And hello, my dear friends from the other side of Europe.
I don't know if the UK is considered to be Europe.
Well, geographically, it is Europe, Sophia.
Very, very right.
And of course, it's not the first time that we have Daniel and Sophia with us. They were in separate interviews, let's say, during the first lockdown last spring. And of course, we have organized an amazing webinar with them back in September, because they are not only lecturers in important European universities, they are also authors, and authors of a very, very interesting book, a very popular book, I must say, as well, English for the 21st Century Skills, published by Express Publishing, and so far, I must say, one of our bestsellers regarding resource books.
I so like to hear this when you say it's a bestseller.
So that means we're best-selling authors, eh?
Of course, I hope that you won't be disappointed by the sales report in the end of the year. But, you know, it's I must say that irrespective of the sales, there has been such a nice feedback regarding this book. And I think both me and Natasha, on behalf of Express, we need to thank you one more time publicly, because the feedback has been amazing, and more and more teachers in the social media that I know both of you are very active on, they go publicly and they express almost every day nice words and feedback regarding this title. So really, thank you.
This is so true. I know what you mean. And we really believe that this project, of course, is a collaborative project. I mean, a project we worked with Daniel very closely. But a big thank you to Express Publishing and you, George, because you believed in this project from the very, very beginning.
Yes, George, if it weren't for you and for Express Publishing, this book might not have reached all the teachers that it's currently accessible to. So we really thank you for that.
It has been a real pleasure. And I think this is the whole process of this publication resonates with the name of the publisher. It was literally an express process, because there was such a good chemistry since the very first moment when we met in IATEFL 2 years ago, that talking, you know, in comparison with other similar projects, that was really, really, really fast. And I'm sure, you know, people were expecting it and they also enjoyed it. Now, let's get back to the questions that we have for you today with Natasha. And, you know, we had this conversation also in March, and we also talked about the pandemic. It was a pandemic mode back then, and it's a pandemic now as well. However, we have all realized how much this has affected education. And the first question that I would like to address to both of you, or maybe, you know, you can take turns and answer, is how are you assessing education now compared to April
or May, first lockdown. Are we talking about any progress, maybe a transition, a change of mindset? How have you seen any changes? Have you noticed any pattern, or the things remain the same?
If I may, I think that absolutely. I think the ELT community made tremendous progress. Not just progress. I mean, huge progress regarding remote teaching. Of course, I think Daniel will agree with that. We are talking about those who were able to move online, because we cannot assume that all teachers in the world were able to do that. There are still huge digital divides, and people don't have internet to go online. But for those who did, we all remember how the transition from face-to-face to online happened within a week or perhaps shorter. So the teachers were brave, exceptionally brave. And all the educational community, not just teachers, managers, administrators, and students, they dived in, and it was a steep learning curve for them. And I work at an institution, and I know that I'm speaking both as an insider and as a specialist. So it was a steep learning curve, and they did it, some better than others, but it doesn't really matter, because it also has to do with internet equipment, skills, etc. So I believe that we are now the educational community, we are now in a better position, in a much, much better position to use technology for language learning. And I also think that we as teachers, as educators, we are lifelong learners in general. We are exceptional people, because I don't think that someone can survive, honestly, the realities of the classroom if you're not a learner yourself. And I'm not saying that with regards to technology, but lifelong learning in general. So, yes, it's been a huge change of mindset, and teachers moved from "I can't" to "I can" with regards to technology, which is an incredible achievement. However, I think there is a catch here. So I don't know, shall I continue, or should we remain in the positives? Daniel, what do you think? Because I have, you know, some negative things to talk about as well, perhaps something that we need to consider for the future. Daniel, what do you think?
In fact, I was going to add some negatives to what you were saying. I fully concur with you that teachers around the world, the majority of them, have been doing a brilliant job in adapting to this reality. But what we're also now becoming aware of is the effect of the pandemic on the education of so many learners around the world. We know, for example, that learning and development have been interrupted and disrupted for millions of students around the world. A recent report by the Economic Policy Institute, for example, maintains that reduced learning has likely impeded student learning, and it has also affected the development of the whole child. Why is this? Well, we know that a lockdown was imposed in many countries. We know that this lockdown in certain cases forced students to adapt to a reality that they were not used to, and they had to do that very quickly. The teachers had to adapt very quickly as well, in many cases with a lack of support. And even now that things are getting back to normal in many countries, we still have an issue with the length of lesson time. For example, if I look at my own country, many students are being provided with shorter lessons. What will be the effect of this on these learners, given that education in the early phases of a person's life is of crucial importance and has a huge impact on the development of the individual? Moreover, what is also clear is that whilst many students have adapted and have ultimately continued with their education, there have been many thousands of students who have given in to absenteeism. They haven't been online attending lessons. They haven't been engaging with remote learning with the same kind of engagement that we hoped for. So most often what happens is that the people who are ultimately the victims of opportunity gaps, low-income students, for example, they have been put at a bigger disadvantage because of the pandemic when compared to the better-off peers. And as Sophia pointed out, one of the most critical opportunity gaps is the uneven access to technological devices, access to the internet, which are vital for remote learning. In fact, a recent study by the Human Rights Watch on the African context shows how many thousands of students in different African countries have suffered because of the pandemic, suffered in terms of their education. Existing inequalities have been exacerbated because of that, especially when it comes to girls' education, interestingly enough.
Daniel, thank you so much for saying all this, because sometimes I feel lonely when I talk to, when I talk about the negatives. So thank you so much for all this. I was going to add that it is the inequalities that you have referred to, and as you said, you use the example from Malta, and there are other examples. I think that the catch here, what the challenge that is ahead of us, is bridging the gap between the emergency remote mode that we are still in. It is a more mature phase. We are not where we started back in March. It's definitely a more mature phase, but we are still in some kind of emergency mode, because there are gaps with the pedagogy, there are gaps with the materials, there are gaps with students learning, as very well Daniel referred to. Teachers' workload, teachers are still struggling and juggling and are overworked. Students' distraction, for example, is considerable. And I hear people say students are distracted online, or students don't like learning online. And my answer to this is that this is not online learning. This is still emergency remote teaching, which is an excellent approach for the crisis, but it should not be the new paradigm of online education. So the reason why I'm saying that, and I assume Daniel as well, is it is understandable that all this happened, because change during a pandemic is not easy, let's face it. But the challenge that is ahead of us is to bridge the gap between this situation and a more pedagogically and inclusive learning reality, learning solution.
And in terms of the gap, if I may add to what Sophia has been saying, yes, it's vital to bridge the gap. But a question that comes to mind is whether governments around the world will have enough money to do that. One of the biggest issues now in 2021 is going to be, how are we going to finance education? Prior to the pandemic, OECD countries in the sort of as an average, they spent 11% of the budgets on education. But because of the pandemic, a lot of money had to be funneled into the health sector and the economy in order to allow the economy to come back on its feet and to deal with the immediate problems of the health sector. So what is going to happen in the future, in the immediate future, if there isn't enough money for general education, not only language education, not only ELT, but general education more broadly? And this is not only being said by the OECD. In fact, a recent policy note published by the World Bank shows that one of the biggest effects of the pandemic on countries' education is going to be how much they're able to spend on education.
it's really nice that you have decided to touch those things, because, you know, we are used to listening to people, you know, making really impressive comments as far as online education is concerned. And though you mentioned something like a review between the previous lockdown, which was after March, and now the new lockdowns that every country has to face, I know that, as Sophia said, the situation might be slightly better, but I can hear you very skeptical towards this new era and this new kind of teaching that we all have to face. What really attracted my attention is the fact that girls have to face quite a lot of problems, like Daniel mentioned, especially in the countries of the third world or Africa, or I don't know which ones you meant specifically, Daniel, but that's what I kept from your previous comments. But the financing of education is also a very important issue. I will just add something more positive, because I've heard that generally the economy, the global economy, might rise after this March. These are the latest studies that I have seen as far as the financial side is concerned. I'm not sure whether education is going to be benefited from that. But let's be more specific and tell me, what is your opinion between those two different periods, March lockdown and the new lockdowns that we have to face just before the vaccination all around the world?
Yeah, I think that teachers managed the impossible, and they are now in a better position to move on to the next phase. The fact that I'm an advocate of technology, I think it's sure, I cannot dispute that, and I'm very proud of it. However, what technology are we talking about? So I believe that we are still in emergency remote teaching, but this is an improved version, because teachers are more confident and more experienced, and they can take risks and innovate. However, if ELT, I'm talking about ELT here, remains in this phase, if we normalize this kind of teaching, Daniel, for example, he talked about shorter lessons, and I've heard that elsewhere. Why? Why shorter lessons? Have they been supplemented with asynchronous learning and they are shorter? Is the asynchronous learning designed according to how people learn online, or we just threw some PDFs into a learning management system? So how was this done? So if this continues, I want to flag something up here. We are going to see some kind of Uberization of ELT, and I think that Nick Pitti has mentioned that too. Just like Uber managed to sneak in and offer a less quality service, much cheaper, then we may see this Uberization of ELT too. And of course, because it will be online, then competition will be fierce. So to address this, we need to be competitive by offering a quality online program. And to do that, of course, Daniel gave the bigger picture and talked about finances, etc. And I totally agree. But in a small scale school and institution, we need to educate the teacher with quality teaching and quality online support. We cannot leave the teacher alone. This happened in the first phase, but now we need to move on to something more mature. And I would like to say here that also for this to be achieved, we need to move on to bridge the gap. We need to move on from emergency remote training as well, because this happens quite a lot lately. Suddenly there are many people sharing content online, presenting about teaching online, and some of this content is very, very good, but some is extremely poor. And we need an extra layer of critical thinking here. And I'm not talking about teachers presenting what they do in the classroom. how this worked for them, you know, teachers sharing their practices. No, 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 this is absolutely fantastic. I'm talking about people who think that they have found a golden opportunity here. And just because they have a Zoom account and did some emergency remote teaching themselves during the pandemic, perhaps did a how to teach with technology course that 10 years ago, they're now giving training sessions. Some of them charge them as well. They're not for free, about how to teach online. So what I want to say here to teachers is that they need to be extra careful, because most of this training is emergency remote training and it won't take them where they want to go.
That's very true, Sophie, and you've talked quite a lot about this in other fora, and you've experienced yourself as a professional and as an expert in online learning and the use of technology. What's happening in different contexts around the world when it comes to providing teachers with the training that they so need. So yes, teachers during the pandemic have mentioned, have stated that they require training in the use of ICT, for example. But the irony is that the kinds of programs, the kinds of courses that they enroll on are not always the ones that they find most valuable. In fact, a recent study shows that the professional development programs that teachers consider to have the most impact are the ones based on strong subject and curriculum content, involving collaborative approaches to teaching, and incorporating active learning. But then, when teachers actually follow professional development opportunities, these are most likely to consist of courses, webinars, seminars that do not have that collaborative form of professional development. So here we have a bit of a paradox, as it were.
Like the shadows on the wall. Guys, I must tell you that I'm speechless. This is one of the best interviews we've ever had on Teachers Coffee. I think that's a proper webinar. And honestly, because we're having two experts who are so eager to share and they talk so much to the point about all these ideas. And thank you really for expressing speaking your mind and expressing your opinion so freely and so to the point. I think all this makes absolute sense. These gaps that you have pinpointed, and all of them are very well argumented. Let me move to the next question. I'm going to twist it a little bit. It was like a cliche question, but I really got inspired from your words. So I'm going to twist it a little bit for the good. Okay, so what would be your ideal scenario after this pandemic? I mean, we're talking about getting back to normal, the normality. Okay, let's assume that COVID stops in 2-3 months. What is the ideal educational scenario for both of you?
Daniel, shall I go first, or would you like to go to ask?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I think that I want to believe, and I've said that before, that I hope that when we are ready to go back to the classroom and, you know, without safety measures, when this pandemic is behind us, really, I really hope that we won't just go back to how things were before COVID-19. I hope we have learned a lot along the way. So I hope that we use this knowledge and this mindset to go forward. And as an advocate of technology, technology, if it is appropriately used, I'm not talking about this tool and that tool and tools everywhere, can help education and language learning on so many levels. Collaboration, creativity, sharing, learning. So we need to use this knowledge to go forward. And as a digital learning specialist consulting institutions around the world, I can say that many institutions are already looking ahead and they are not going back to how things were. And I think that this is all very positive. I just hope that it won't just be a privileged few, but all teachers, all students will be able to not go back to how things were, but they will be able to go forward.
Well, in terms of my wishes or expectations for the future, and if I had to focus on teachers, what I would hope for is that teachers are provided with the support to meet the social, emotional and academic needs of learners in the future, if challenging circumstances continue to occur, because we're all thinking that there is going to be a post-COVID future. But as Bill Gates reminds us in his TED Talk from 2015, the future that we are all going to live through is one where our biggest enemy are going to be these pandemics that will occur every few years. Let us not forget that COVID-19 has been described as a black swan, an extreme condition. In a VUCA world means basically a world characterized by volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. So what I would hope for is that teachers are provided with the necessary support so that they can develop the socio-emotional competencies required in order for them to deal with these challenging scenarios that they're going to face in the classroom and elsewhere. And that would involve being equipped with a repertoire of skills and knowledge, including mindfulness, for example, stress management techniques, the ability to engage in teamwork so that to solve problems more efficiently, as well as having the necessary digital literacy to adapt to such situations if they had to happen again in the future. And it's not just me saying this. This was all pointed out in a recent special issue of the European Journal of Teacher Education, which shows that teachers during the pandemic were shocked at all levels. But at the same time, we also saw teachers finding solutions to problems that they had not encountered before. Let us make sure that the teachers of tomorrow, the teachers of 2021 and the coming years, are better equipped to deal with such challenging situations if they had to happen again.
Lovely wish. Lovely wish. Thank you, Daniel.
So that is amazing, guys. I mean, I cannot, I don't want this show to stop, to tell you the truth. This live podcast of I don't want it to stop. But,
neither do I.
Yes, but that would be my last question. But Daniel referred to that in a way. I wanted to ask you, since we referred to your excellent book, The 20 English for 21st Century Skills, and I have to take the opportunity and also thank the rest of the authors that contributed to this amazing project of yours. I would like to ask you that if we are to take into consideration all these things that you mentioned in your books and the skills and the articles that are mentioned in your book, which of the skills, the 21st century skills, would you consider necessary for every teacher to acquire in order to be ready for the next day? And I mean, okay, it's easy to say that we all need creativity and so on, but this is something that we have to practice every day. I mean, we have to be creative as teachers every day in order not to become boring to the students. But which ones do you consider the most useful ones that sometimes are a bit hard to find among, you know, the traditional way of teachers, the traditional style of teachers? So which ones would you believe that it's necessary for us to acquire so to be ready for the next day and any next day that might occur? Because we have to be ready and we have to have a very vivid memory of whatever we had to face throughout 2020.
I think it's all. I wouldn't like to pick one. I think it's easy to get carried away and think that digital literacy, for example, is the number one skill during the pandemic or to prepare for the next pandemic. Yes, it may be, and it is my specialism after all, but it is not the only one. Social justice, for example, Daniel referred to inequalities and digital divisions, well-being, critical thinking, leadership, and so many more are important to keep us going. So the ability, for example, to step out of our comfort zone, something that teachers did to a great extent during the pandemic and they're still doing, has nothing to do with digital literacies. It shows leadership. It shows creativity. So during a crisis, we need them all. Our students need them all more than ever before. So buy our book, English for 21st Century Skills. That was the conclusion.
Correct, Sophia, yes.
I agree with Sophia that all of the skills mentioned in the book are vital. But perhaps the skill that I think will be most useful for teachers and students in the coming years is a skill that we didn't include in the book, and that is adaptability. If we look at the definition of researchers at the University of Southern California, adaptability is all about demonstrating mental agility, remaining comfortable with the ambiguous, unstructured environments that we live and work in, being flexible in the face of continual change. And if our learners and our colleagues are willing to adjust their thinking and approach challenges in new ways, in unexpected ways, then perhaps that would be highly useful for them. So let's hope that ELT, but general education more broadly, is able to equip people with that particular skill.
Well, this differentiation between the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. George, you had a lovely article published on Teachers Coffee Group, one of the previous day. I've seen so many things lately and I've worked on so many different platforms that I don't remember where I see things, but I remember this article.
Actually, it was not an article, it was an infographic, like a poster, but had a lot of key points. So yeah, basically you could see the basic ideas for these two different mindsets. Personally, I have no words to thank you because that was more than an interview. That was literally was beyond my expectations in a good sense, because we had a very standardized interview prepared and you really gave us a thorough, very well argumented, and if I'm allowed to say, very juicy lecture, you know, on, I like this, Sophia, emergency remote teaching. I really love this. I really love this.
Well, guys, thank you very much. I hope you have a lovely weekend and I hope you stay safe and always creative and always adaptable like you do.
Thank you so much.
Oh, we said that together. yeah, thank you so much. And Merry Christmas to you all. And stay safe and healthy. Nearly there.
Take care. Thank you all.
Before we say goodbye, and I think Natasha needs to say also goodbye for Christmas holidays, I will leave this part of saying goodbye for you. Just a very quick reminder, tomorrow we have the last webinar with the president of IATEFL, Gabriel Diaz-Maggioli, on topics into tasks. It's at 6 o'clock UK time. Be there. This is going to be the last webinar of the year for Express Publishing. Please receive my best wishes for Christmas holidays to all the teachers of the world, to all the community of Teachers Coffee. And we will be back on during 2021 very soon with a new show, new ideas, and new guests. Until then, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and it's bye-bye from me.
And it's goodbye from me too. Have a nice weekend and Merry Christmas too.
Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a sliding rule is for, but I do know one and one is two. And if this one could be with you.
What a wonderful world this would be.
Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be